Hey, this is Channing.
And this is Leah.
And you reached Vessel, Artist's Doorway.
Welcome to episode 4.
Hey guys, we just want to welcome you to episode number 4. We really enjoy creating this podcast, and if this is one of your first times being with us, we just want to thank you so much. We know that there's so much, many other things that you could be doing with your time. So spending your time with us, we just want to really thank you from the bottom of our hearts for being here with us. This week, we have something really special happening.
So originally, I was supposed to have a physical art show, but because of social distancing right now, it's forcing us to be more creative. So there's always positives and negatives to these types of situations. And so what I wanted to do was I wanted to still have the show, but do it digitally. But I really wanted to retain the intimacy of the experience of the art show. So what I'm doing is I'm using virtual reality and augmented reality to still kind of retain that intimate reaction that you have with the artwork. So tomorrow is when that show will be released. I have a virtual viewing room, and if you DM me through Facebook or Instagram, or if you send me an email, or if you sign up to be on the email list, you'll be receiving the password to have access to that viewing room.
Yeah, this show, guys, I know I said it last week, Leah did a phenomenal job on this show, and I don't think I've really seen anything out there as of yet that can really stand up to this virtual reality that she's been able to create. I know the software is really new, but man, Leah, you knocked it out of the park this time.
Thank you, Channing. I really appreciate that. And I hope you guys listening, I hope you guys really enjoy the show as well. It's new technology and it's taken me a while to get the hang of it. But now that I've been working with it, I'm hoping that I'm going to be able to crank many more shows out like this as well. And I know as time goes on, it just gets better, because especially right now, everything's kind of experimental. So there's going to be some hiccups and some bumps. But what's exciting is that after we dust ourselves off, those hiccups can be opportunities for growth. And the whole idea of kind of rolling with the punches and the things that happen that we're not expecting is one of the things that was really awesome talking with Anna Hinton about. Anna Hinton is a designer and an architect and a ceramist. She's fantastic.
Yeah, it was so interesting to hear Anna's perspective on handling business as an entrepreneur. And really, even in this time that we're living in, or even in the future, it doesn't matter. Just hearing how driven she is and how, despite whatever problem comes, she just goes at it no matter what.
Exactly. I really enjoyed when she talked to us about her experience with Frank Gehry, and we discussed her approach to problem solving and designing with intention. Even how, to me, it's like her empathy, how she uses that as she designs by imagining the people that are going to live in the space or use her ceramics or whatever it is that she's designing. It's really fantastic. So here it is, you guys. Our conversation with the lovely, talented, and really, really smart Anna Hinton.
Hello, everyone. We have the lovely Anna Hinton with us, and we are just so happy and excited to have her on the podcast.
I'm happy and excited to be here on your podcast. This is so much fun.
And, you know, for a while, we've been wanting to interview you and just do something, you know, creative with you, because you're just an awesome person. And I think we met about 2 years ago. You were telling me that Still Life opened up about 2 years ago, right?
Almost so, 2 years ago. Yeah, 2 years in April.
And I think we came in, I think it was like maybe one of the first months that you were here at the Row. By the way, audience.
We met Leah first. Right, I remember that day.
And we were just so impressed. First of all, I had never actually walked into a ceramic studio before. It was one of my first times. And when I walked in, I was like, oh my word, it was just amazing.
I love hearing that reaction from people. That's awesome.
And I think I purchased one of your vases that day.
I remember. That was from the Bloom collection that was at the Moka show.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, that's right.
And then I think we came back and I purchased a couple of Ben Medinsky, which I was so upset because you remember the mover? He came in and he broke that vase.
Yeah, no.
We were just so upset. But we still have yours.
Okay.
And on a regular basis, we're always putting like different flowers and all types of stuff.
That makes me very happy.
Yeah. we're even doing like photo shoots with it. So we just love you.
You know, Anna. It's funny. I forgot that that's how we met, that you guys just happened to come into the shop. I totally remember that day. Yeah, that's right. And you told us about your art and we got you in for a workshop.
Yeah.
I mean, at this point, like we see you often. So you kind of, it's nice to remember those beginings.
Well, we just feel like you're a part of our family, you know, so we feel the same.
Are you kidding? This is great.
People, Anna, she's an architect, but she is a very special one. She graduated with a master's from Princeton, a designer, a ceramist. I don't really even know how to describe her. Anna, could you just please just tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this?
I mean, I'll say, first of all, you're not the only one. I get this from my personal close friends all the time. Like, how do we introduce you to people? And I love just the word designer, even though I'm trained as an architect and I do still do architectural work. And I do work in ceramics. For me, the word designer encompasses all of that. Even when I was a student at Princeton, I never liked, I loved architecture. I still love architecture. But I never thought the word architect encompasses everything that an architect actually does. I think the training you get in architecture is so incredible. I think, at least it was for me, for my mind and how my mind works. It was the perfect left brain, right brain profession for me to study in school. So you're creative, but you're also pragmatic. You're solving issues, but you're also creating new avenues. So I took that training, and the reason why I never liked just that word architect is it simplified it too much for me. It meant that you only build structures. And that training for me made it, like, designer worked so much better because you could be making anything. So the idea is you're designing a restaurant, you're designing a plate, you're designing an environment, you're designing a home, an atmosphere. Like, that to me seems to fit the things that sort of turn me on. Things that I like to do. I like creating and making and problem solving. So, designer. Yeah. Simple.
Just humble. Very humble. And, you know, we just love the things that you're doing. I told you that when I first started throwing with ceramics, I was watching your video on YouTube, and I think I saw the numbers go up just on the amount of views, and that was probably because I just kept hitting the rewind button. And, you know, I've learned so much from you over the years. You know, I'm rarely impressed with your business, the way that you handle things, the way that you work with all of the people here at Still Life. It's very impressive. Sometimes when I'm over here throwing on a wheel, I'll see you have like a little meeting.
Our team meetings. Yeah. I know. People hate those meetings.
Well, I enjoy them because I'm kind of like eavesdropping a little bit. And, you know, it's really cool, you know, the type of work environment
I'll tell you, one of my pet peeves in, you know, having friends who are artists and working with artists and creatives is that people don't think that artists can run a business. Mm-hmm. They don't think that it's that right brain, left brain right, thing right. that people say, like, oh, you're flaky or you're, but you know, artists are problem solvers. They, and these team meetings, I get a lot of flack from our team. They're like, oh, why do we have to do this every week? Or why does it last so long? But it's important for us to communicate. And this is the planning side. This is the building side and the problem solving side. And I'm happy that you are on my side with this and understand the importance of it. You know, we work with a lot of young kids, and I think eventually they'll see that these meetings are what help things run smoothly. Right, when people come to the studio, one of the things we wanted, our goal was Still Life Studio. So we have Still Life Ceramics, which is the brand, which is what Mel and I do, and we make small batch production. But the studio aspect of it is the sharing part, because we love it so much. We wanted a space where we could invite artists and invite others to experience the things that we love doing. And it's kind of, it grew into something way bigger than what we thought. We thought we'd open it a couple of times a week and people would come in, take a class, do a workshop. But now it's turned into a life of its own, like something we were not expecting. And the two of us are still trying to get back to the beginning where we have time to make stuff. But right now we're dedicated to building this environment. And part of it, part of those meetings and part of that planning is to make this a space where people can create and be in their own thoughts and their own, like where their mind and their hands want to take them. You kind of have to have these boring meetings with spreadsheets to allow for the tranquility of everything else. Does that make sense?
No, that's perfect. Yeah, it totally makes sense to me.
All right, we just skipped the beat.
Okay.
Tell us a little bit about your background. How is it that you came into architectural design? How did you come into clay? You know,
that background.
We just met your pop.
So oh, yeah. Oh, he forced me into architecture.
Okay.
That was, yeah. So this is great. This is a really good point. He was the one that's, so I, you know, in high school, I was into art. I was the art kid. And I got a scholarship to go to Parsons in New York. And my parents freaked out and said, no way are we sending our kid to New York City to study art. You'll never make a living. You are good at math and physics. Like, you are going to take an architecture class. And I was still in high school. It was my senior year. So I took drafting, you know, just to kind of, and I fell in love. So, you know, like when your parents force you into something, like this had a happy ending because they actually forced me into something that worked. So I took that drafting class and it combined my love of art with my love of precision and problem solving. So then I went into architecture school. But while I was in architecture school, I couldn't really, the computer modeling wasn't quite as sophisticated as it is today. So it's really easy to create shapes and forms in the computer. But, you know, the software was still early days when I was in school. So to create curves and spaces in 3D, I used clay. So a lot of my models in school, I would just use clay. I hadn't taken a pottery class or a ceramics class. Like, that was the one material that I could bend into the shapes I was envisioning.
Crazy.
That was like my intro into the world of ceramics. Now, there are some amazing ceramic artists who taught at Princeton, because Princeton has a ceramics program, that I had no idea about. And I'm kicking myself now that I didn't take those classes. But, you know, eventually I got around to it. But yeah, that was clay for me started through architecture. I moved to Los Angeles to work for Frank Gehry. I really loved his work. And I later found out that he started opposite. He started in ceramics and his at USC, was an assistant professor there and took classes there. And the professor he was under, famous person whose name I can't remember, told Frank, like, ceramics is not for you. You should try architecture. I just feel like there's something between these professions that there's form, it's function, it's creating space. Like, I'm not surprised with how many architects are also ceramicists in their spare time. So I came to LA to work for Frank. I loved it. I was there for 5 years, got a huge ego. I thought I was like the center of the world, the most talented person ever. And somebody offered me a kitchen remodel and I quit. I was like, all right, see ya, Frank Gehry and Associates. I'm going to start my own firm. And Frank Gehry himself actually stopped by my desk and said, you're going to hate this. He's like, you're going to hate your contractors. You're going to hate your clients. It's really hard. But when you're young, you don't really, you know, understand all that. But he was right. It's definitely a love-hate thing. And then, you know, starting your business on your own, you look for a release, something to help you deal with that daily stress of running a business. And that's when ceramics kind of came back into my life. And that's when I started wheel throwing, and which I'd never done before. It was just hand building. So wheel throwing for me was just about centering. It was very meditative. It wasn't about making. It was more about kind of what it did to settle my mind. Eventually, some of my clients found out that I was making plates. And because I had started at some point in my career focusing more on restaurant design, a few of my clients started ordering plates and dishes and tiles even. We did tiles for a restaurant. And then I met Mel during this whole kind of period, and she started helping on these orders. And I just love working with her. You know, like it's a good partnership. So one day we were kind of saying, should we start a business? And I'm like, you know, I've started a business before. It's a great way to kill the thing you love. But we talked about it a lot and we said, let's do it. And I think because I'm partners with her, we can still love it. You know, we can still enjoy the process in addition to working on those team meetings. Mm-hmm. That's the background. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah, that's awesome. Wonderful.
Yeah, you know, you're such a lovely person. And just to hear...
It's all a facade. It's not real.
You know, just seeing that transition going from architecture to actually working with clay, and you're a phenomenal ceramist. You know, I've seen some of the shapes. Like you said, I've actually purchased some of your work. Could you give us a little bit of a background? We heard you on one of your talks. You mentioned that you were a pioneer and there was some bushwhacking.
Oh, my God.
Something like that.
So that was for one of the Morning Creative Talk series. They kind of come up with a topic and they pair people with the topic. And the topic was pioneer. And I was like, well, I don't really consider myself a pioneer as in an inventor of anything. But the part of that that was interesting to me is the kind of spirit you have to have of jumping into the unknown. Like that, I was like, I could maybe talk on that a little bit. So, you know, as you guys are creatives and small business owners, and you know, whenever you start something, there's a lot of factors here. You know, you are jumping into something unknown. You don't know if you have enough money. You know, zero money in my case every time. You don't know if you're going to have the right team. You don't really know if you're going to have the right clients. You kind of have a dream, you know, and the map is sort of your business plan. You know, you kind of have, you put this plan together and you hope it works out. And to me, that was the kind of connection with explorers. And like, you know, I just watched Hidden Figures again last night. So Katherine Johnson, you know, I had to rewatch that story and reread all of that because I just think it's so amazing that, you know, you celebrate the person who makes it on the moon, but then the amount of work and the incredible people and all the math and organization and everything that takes to achieve that. You know, these are pioneers. These are the things that always inspire me. So whenever I look at a creative act or a piece of innovation, like I'm always fascinated with all the layers and steps that go behind it and how much intention has to be there and how much faith. Like, so this woman, you know, was along with a huge team of people, of course, not just one person, but, you know, had to calculate all these things and have enough faith. You know, all these people had to have enough faith in everything they were doing to make this journey happen. So, you know, when you start a business, when you start any endeavor, like you have these dreams, you have these plans, you have this math, you have this research, you have whatever it is. And then you kind of take that leap and you hope everything goes according to plan. So sometimes that same thing can be attributed to something very small, like making something on the wheel. You kind of have an intention there. Like you think it's going to come out one way and the clay starts going another way and then you have to pivot. So I feel like everything I look at is sort of, you have this plan, you're kind of jumping into an unknown, and then you have to be able to go with it.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I hope that kind of answers the question.
Yeah. Yeah, and you know, that really goes in line with this podcast, Vessel, Art is a Doorway, because there's a lot of podcasts. I think I was looking at some statistics. Some statistics on Buzzsprout, and they mentioned that there were almost like 1 million podcasts.
Wow.
However, there's not a lot of podcasts that are actually talking in on this subject about how art affects people's emotions, how art affects people's psyche, you know, their psychology, culturally, how art is affecting people. And just that little tidbit that you gave us was really profound, because you're focusing in on just creating an idea and just going all into it. How many people really regret the fact that they live their lives and they never were able to actually do some things that they really had a deep desire to actually, you know, go right into, you know? So that's awesome, Anna.
Well, the first thing I was kind of had a question about is the fact that you mentioned you were an art kid. What was one of your first experiences with art that kind of made you want to become a creative?
Oh, wow. Okay. This is going to take me back because I'm not young. I got to think back quite a bit. In high school, I don't know what made me think I could draw, but somehow I could. And, you know, I grew up in Michigan, Detroit area, and there was all these county fairs the way they have in the Midwest. And one of the things they had at these fairs was an art show. Mm-hmm. And I remember one year, I think I was a sophomore in high school, I submitted 3 pieces that I drew. You know, I think one was an original and 2 were something I copied off a photograph. And I won 1st, 2nd, and 3rd prize.
Wow.
And, you know, again, like these things happen and you think you're the... You know, and then you open up your eyes to the world around you. You're like, wait a minute, there's some really amazing artists here. But I think that kind of acknowledgement made me think that this is something that, you know, is fun and I could do. And I enjoyed it very much. And I enjoyed seeing other creative things people were doing at that age. So I definitely remember knowing early on, like knowing at 16 that I was going to do something in the creative field. I wasn't sure what, but that I knew.
Yeah.
And so when you approach your design and creativity, do you think like when you, for instance, like with your the space and architecture, do you imagine being in that space or the emotion that space, like the person walking into the space, how they're going to feel about it? Or do you think about first how the space can like benefit, how people will interact with the space?
You know, I don't know if living in LA for 20 years now has impacted me in this way or if I always thought this way, but there's something whenever I approach a project, and whether it's in design or with ceramics, mm-hmm. I need the narrative.
Oh.
Like I need to, and Mel always teases me about this. She's like, why do you need a story? Like, I don't need a story. I'm like, I need to know what it is I'm doing and why, and I need to create the world around it. So if it's a restaurant, you know, then and it's kind of like, what is the ambiance? What is it? Who is this? What is the story we're trying to say? If it's a home, certainly the narrative comes from the people the house is for, mm-hmm. what their lifestyle is like, the landscape, the hillside. And if it's ceramics, this is where I have a hard time saying I'm a ceramic artist. Mm-hmm. I like to say, I like to identify myself as a potter. And this is where I think architecture influences my work with clay, is I need a function.
Mm-hmm.
I think ceramic artists will be inspired by anything, by the political situation we're living in now, by something happening in the world, mm-hmm. whereas a potter, I really need that function, mm-hmm. part. Like I need to know, like, this has to hold something. This has to display something. Like I still need that in my clay work, the functionality of the piece before I start crafting. And which is one of the reasons why in the studio we invite so many ceramic artists, mm-hmm. because I love learning from people who work with clay where function is not the primary role, mm-hmm. and what drives them. Mm-hmm. So in my work currently, and for the foreseeable future, although I also kind of have some inklings towards something else much later, the function of what I'm doing with clay, like how is this to be used, is a big part of my approach to making.
Mm. Well, I think that's pretty fantastic. I think that kind of shows like levels of empathy on your part. And I think that probably, would you say, kind of even forces your work into directions that
absolutely.
You wouldn't have imagined.
Yeah. Absolutely.
Outside of that.
Yeah, that is amazing. Now, how do you think, or what are your feelings about art, design, and creativity? How has that changed you as a person? Where's a potter? Yeah, I know that's...
How do you feel like things would have gone if you hadn't gone into it? Can you imagine what you might...
I can't imagine anything else, really. Honestly, right now, I'm so steeped into it. But I'll tell you something that has happened that I wasn't expecting. And part of this is in starting the business side of this and working with a team, definitely being a potter, being an artist, a ceramic artist, it's a very singular approach. It's a very singular vision. You know, people who work on the wheel, you have to be very focused on what you're doing. It's not a team sport. But when you open it up the way we have here, it becomes that. And definitely, I didn't realize that art, and I didn't realize how hard it was going to be for me. And I didn't realize how much I would love it. And now really, really, really want to support the team aspect of this. I'll give you an example. When we opened the studio, like I said, it was mostly for Mel and I to have a space to work. And then we got some friends in to teach, and then we got some new people in. And so much of my time was spent making it function. Like, how do we make sure we have enough money to keep the lights on,
right,
while everybody else was making, you know? And I got what I call it Gina envy, after Gina Zeiker, one of the artists we work with. Like, Gina would be here and she's making gorgeous things and I'm poring over spreadsheets, and I would get mad at her. I was like, Gina, you're making too much. We can't fit all your stuff in the kiln. Of course she wasn't making too much. Of course we could fit it in the kiln. But I was feeling envy because I couldn't work. Because I wasn't working with clay. And, you know, eventually I was able to catch myself, thank God, before alienating everyone around me, and say, you know, in supporting, creating a space where others can work, you know, I found joy in that and participating in what others are making through that process. And, you know, eventually getting some, being able to carve out some time to work on my own. But, you know, it just made me much more patient as a person. I hope. It's still a journey. I'm knocking on wood. It's still a journey I'm on, the patience part. And being, you know, finding ways to accommodate other people making and creating. I never had that on the agenda. It was never in my business plan or on my map of you need to create this for others. I just thought whatever I created for myself, it would work for others. But you know what? Then you're like, no, this doesn't work for everybody. Shocking. You know, like, you actually need to, like, if you're going to create the space, you need to hear what other people are doing. And I didn't think I would find as much joy in that I have. And I love it. I just love it, which is why we kind of dove into the second studio. Like, Channing, Leah, you know, I honestly didn't think I would get so much satisfaction out of just creating the environment for others to enjoy. This has been new for me. This has definitely been...
I feel like that kind of goes back to what you were saying about how sometimes some people feel like if you're creative, then you can't have the other, you know, those other qualities too. But I feel like it enhances. That's kind of like
it
what
does.
I'm hearing from you.
Yeah.
It's like, because
I wasn't expecting it.
Exactly. And so it's like, because you have that background of creating physical spaces for people and then also objects for them to use, now that you're creating some sort of space for other people to create, it just goes hand in hand.
Yes. I this has been the most amazing part for me in this whole process, and what has gotten me through some of the difficult stages.
And I remember we got a chance to chat, but I think it was like last month, and you mentioned something that really hit me in the heart. You said that you live for the arts. Do you remember you saying that?
I don't remember saying that. Yeah, but I don't, yeah. I'm not disagreeing, because I can see myself saying that. I do. Like, that's the thing that gets me up in the morning, you know, whether it's seeing what something someone made, or seeing the progress of something someone's working on. Like, we just walked in here for this podcast, and I'm looking at this piece that's right behind you, Channing, that Francis River made. He's been with us since the beginning. It's stunning. And that just made my day.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, we'll put pictures of that.
Okay, great.
In the side notes.
You know, but when you see beautiful things like that, like, doesn't just your whole body feels it? Like, you just feel, physically feel better when you see something that excites you. And I'm not talking about beautiful things, because, you know, we all know what I think is beautiful may not be what, but just something that triggers something in your body. Like, I do live for that. Like, that is my trigger.
Yeah. And that's awesome. Because, you know, from a medical professional, I see the impact that art has on people. You know, we can just see the patients that we deal with. You know, when you're laying on a stretcher and you're sick, you're dying of cancer, someone is pushing your stretcher down the hallway, and you're seeing, like you said, you know, our perspective may be different. Something that is beautiful from our perspective, or that soothes us, a piece of ceramics, even in the hallway, it has a direct impact on patient care.
It can have power. It can be power. I mean, the art therapy aspect that we've been talking about, it is definitely a layer to this that I want to explore more. Like, understand, what is it that tugs at your chemistry and makes these things move around in your body to make you feel good? Like, I would love to be able to pinpoint that a little bit more and help people tap into that. And as you know, we're both here because of ceramics, but you know, I know music does this. I know food does this for people. Smells, scents, sights. The three of us both happen to work with clay. So we, I feel like are on the same page with this, but when I hear how art of all kinds can affect people, that's just amazing to me.
Yeah. And, you know, I wanted to focus in on a couple of things. You know, in listening to one of your talks, you mentioned functionality in one of those talks. And do you feel like there's a resurgence for ceramics? And we don't want to use the word casually, craft, in the downtown LA area? Or what are your thoughts about that?
I do have a lot of thoughts about this. And my thoughts always change depending on what's happening, or maybe my mood. I don't know. I think when I talk to suppliers and people who've been in the ceramics field for generations, like the Aardvark family has been around in LA for generations, supplying clay and tools and so on. And when I talk to them, they say that there's definitely an uptick. And I think there's a lot of reasons for that. And a lot of people have written about that. A lot of people who spent more time researching it than I have. Certainly social media and the sharing and the oddly satisfying aspect of working on this is visually appealing and attracts people to at least try it. I call it the gateway drug sometimes, you know?
Right.
But I also think technology has had a lot to do with it in a different way, and that is kilns used to be bulky and big and only affordable and able to be installed in large institutions. Now they're smaller. You can plug them into your house. And they're more affordable. So people are now able to kind of do it in their garage. So I think that has a lot to do with the resurgence of the craft.
And I kind of feel like I think people are, I don't know, some of the people that I talk to or my customers, I think that the whole mass marketed type of thing where there's like this anonymous company or anonymous people that you just go to a big store and then you just buy something. I think people really love supporting and, you know, seeing the people that are putting like the care. It's like, I don't know, it's kind of like what we were even talking about too, with the hospital, those stark white walls versus when there's ceramics, sculpture or art on the walls. It just shows that somebody cares. It's like that extra touch or that extra.
I agree. Yeah. Something that you know is handmade definitely tugs at you a little different. But I did also hear that this is kind of a cyclical thing. So the whole manufacturer thing might come back. I don't know. I can't see that because I've always loved handcrafted, but let's talk again in 10 years and see where we are.
Well, your business is definitely thriving. Seeing what you do, the impact that it's having on people. I don't know if you do know, but it is having a tremendous impact.
I don't know, but I love hearing that. I hope that's, you know, the first month we opened, Mel and I were teaching all the classes, you know, it was before we got a team together. And one person did come up to me and say, you know, I was in a really tough place in my life, and taking this class has really helped helped me. And that was the first time that I thought, oh my God, I actually, you know, we actually have a direct one-on-one impact on someone. And even though as an architect, you know your environment, like this was the first time somebody like came up and said that to me. And it made me understand there's a responsibility to what we do. And it made me really kind of refocus on what we talked about earlier. Like the environment we create really needs to support that.
Yeah, it's almost like a little Peter Parker thing, how with
yes.
great power comes great responsibility.
It's like, wait a minute, this isn't just a little store we open. We want to make sure people like being here.
Yeah. We want to get back to Still Life Ceramics itself, because you just opened up a new studio in Santa Monica, right?
Yes.
What was some of the main goals that you and Mel had when opening up Still Life? Like, could you expound on that, or maybe if you can?
So definitely with the space we have here downtown, like I mentioned earlier, it was mostly a space for us to work and to open it up to a few others, be able to invite artists and host workshops. It grew into something we weren't expecting. And, you know, after year one, we said, we can't in this space really support the kind of community we see people want. Mm-hmm. You know, we were getting a lot of students come up and say, I want more. Mm-hmm. I want more hours. I want more access. I want more. And I'm like, we can't really do that much more in this space. So we kind of casually started looking around to see. And we did find a space. It's a much bigger space. Mm-hmm. And we thought, all right, let's see if we can create more. So in this spot, as opposed to when we set up downtown, which was really set up in a very selfish way, just for us to be able to work, mm-hmm. this is set up for everyone to be able to work. Mm-hmm. So it's a very different lens we're wearing. It's much more, this is called Studio. It's not called Still Life Ceramics. It's Still Life Studio. It is a studio. It is a community space. It's about the people who are there.
Wow.
So it's, you like here, you come downtown, you'll see our work on some of the, I mean, you'll see a lot of people's work, but including as our work. You're not going to see our work in Santa Monica. It's really going to be about like coming in. And we're hoping to focus on some other arts as well. We're calling them clay compatible artists. So whether it's painters, carvers, woodworkers, but things that can also inform clay artists. Mm-hmm. We're inviting a lot of different people to come in and share their knowledge with us.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, maybe you can get Leah in.
Oh, again, we'd love that. Of course. Yeah, but now we have more room. You know, like now we can actually really support that.
Yeah, she's a crazy girl. She purchased this sail from a sailboat recently.
Well, actually, it was given to me by Blue Pacific Sailboat.
Amazing.
Yeah, they had like a old racing sail that was like decommissioned. So
it's like the cloth. Is it perforated slightly so air goes through, or is it?
It's actually it's like most. It almost seems like it's plastic. I know it's probably
yes.
not exactly plastic, but it's been like, has like, it's like plastic and strings, lots.
I know the material. Yeah. Yes, that's very interesting. So you're going to draw on that? What are you going to do?
She already started.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't wait to see this.
I have to show you pictures. It's like 30 feet, would you say maybe about 20 or 30 feet high. Measure.
That material is not cheap, too.
Yeah.
And it's going to survive. Like, it's meant for outdoors. It's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's taken up all the studio. I mean, literally from ceiling to floor, it's like...
Wow. Wow.
But anyway, all right. So not talking about us too much, but what has been one of your favorite things about running Still Life? What do you think?
The people, 100%. Like one of the most rewarding and frustrating, to be honest. Yeah. Again, you know, when it was just me and then just Mel and I, that's kind of manageable, personalities and preferences. But when you open up the studio and you hire a team of artists and you invite creative people to share the space with you, you know, it's inspiring every single day. Every single day you walk in and you see work that you didn't see before. It's incredible.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned creating something with your hands. What is that feeling like? You know, here you have this thought, this concept of creating something.
It's like you're God.
And, you know,
It's like all of a sudden it comes out of your hands and it's like, it's amazing. It's so powerful thing. And then it falls apart and you're like, oh man, what happened?
And then a fun part is the acquisition sometimes.
Yes.
You know? Having people acquire some of your work. You know,
it goes both ways. It's so exciting. The feeling when somebody picks up something you made and puts down their hard earned money, it says, I want to take this home. That is just, I don't have the words for it. It's a wonderful feeling, but at the same time, being on the other side and seeing something that moves you, like I have a small ceramics collection and, you know, I look at people's work all the time. And when you see something that excites you and you want to put down your hard earned money and take it home, like, so being on both sides is very exciting.
So what is it like living with those pieces? Like after you purchase them?
So all my friends call me a hoarder. Every single surface in my downtown loft is covered in paintings, ceramics, books, and so on. So one of my very first projects as an architect was for an art collector. And he built a house because he had a large art collection. Mm. And I think I'm heading in that direction. I think I'm going to have to build a house to like hold all these treasures I have. And they're to me, they're treasures. They're literally, I look at them, they bring me joy. Every one of them has a story. A lot of the artists I know personally, some of the artists, of course, I don't. But like you see them in their art. It's fantastic being surrounded by art.
You know, goodness. Anna, you're amazing.
You're so funny.
I know you're booked for time and you have to leave, but it is really interesting hearing that you're an art collector.
I would have you guys over, but really, it's a little hoardy in my place right now, but definitely come over and see for yourselves.
And finally, just wrapping the interview up, could you inform the audience just a little bit about some of the future things that you're going to be doing with Still Life, not only just this current, we could call it a gallery, Still Life Ceramics here, but also Still Life Studio in Santa Monica. What are some of the things that you plan on doing?
So I think what we're really excited about right now is every year Mel and I put one collection together. You guys saw the Super Bloom collection. This year, we don't have a name for it yet, but we're working on the collection. We really only have time to put one collection together at a time. We just don't, you know, we're not large scale production potters. We put one collection. It'll be a couple of dinner sets, some vases, and maybe some lamps if we're so inspired. But we put one collection out. We do it in time for the LA Design Festival in June. So that's really kind of on our agenda at the moment. And then, so that we kind of have two focuses every year. One is our personal collection that we put out under Still Life Ceramics. And then the second is, what are we going to do this year with Still Life Studio? Like, what is going to be the voice of the studio? Who are we bringing in? What are the artists that are coming in? And we are definitely inviting back a lot of our favorite people from last year. And then we've got a few more people that are going to be joining us. I think with the studio that's now going to be open in a couple of weeks, we have a room dedicated to workshops. So when we invite an artist, they can really take over that space and share with us their craft, their time, their vision in a way I think we weren't able to do before.
Yeah, that's really amazing, Anna. You know, it's been a privilege and an honor to
you guys,
have you on this podcast.
You have brought so much to the studio. Like anytime you guys are here, like we're so thrilled to see all of you. So thank you. Thanks for including me on this. Yeah. I'm honored to be here with you.
And you're going to be actually one of the fourth interviews.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
Four is a good number. I like that.
You know, I wanted you to be the number one. But,
no way.
Yeah, that was such a great interview with Anna. I always enjoy talking to her.
Me too. We just had so much fun hanging out with her.
Yeah, you know, one of the things I found very inspiring is how she mentioned that movie, Hidden Figures, and how it takes so much courage to not only just come up with an idea, but the people that actually come behind some of these ideas, they actually launch them. And it takes so much courage to actually just follow through and successfully accomplish what you have in mind. And to see the fruition of it is just beautiful.
Yeah, that was really, really awesome reference when we talked about that. I also really enjoyed hearing when she talked about
sometimes the story she may make up about the family and imagine what they're doing and all the details and how that affects how she designs with intention. And I love that because I think that's sometimes we may enjoy, you know, whatever it is that we're utilizing. It could be the car, it could be the plates or a space. And sometimes we may not know all the minds behind those things and how they really work hard in creating that space to help us feel a certain way. So I really loved hearing her experience in doing that. And that's some of the things that I'm really enjoying about some of the people that we're talking to with this podcast is really shining a light on the people that design the spaces that we live in, the cups that we use, the music that we listen to, all these different things that sometimes we take for granted or that we're using on a daily basis because they make us feel good or they may bring us comfort or just a little bit of joy throughout the day. And hearing the intention behind the people that are actually designing these things is really, really nice.
Yeah, I totally agree with that thought process when it comes to intention. We'd like to invite you to our next interview. Next week, we'll be interviewing the artist, Randy Matashevitz, and she's going to be speaking to us on a subject on how she uses her art to help establish a certain feeling and emotion with her viewers. But thank you for your time, and thank you for being a part of Vessel, Art is a Doorway. Thank you.